Good morning, Oregon, and thank you once again for loading me down and queuing me up. I'm Finn J.D. John, bringing you another daily episode of the Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. Every weekday, this podcast brings you another story from the archives of the Offbeat Oregon History Syndicated Newspaper column. Every weekday except Thursday, that is, and today is Thursday, which is the day we read something from somebody else's archives. In this particular case, it's the Oregon Folklore Studies, the Works Progress Administration, or WPA, project that was undertaken very late in the Great Depression to interview and take oral histories from key people in the state who had lived through interesting times. In this particular case, I'm going to be reading an entire interview by Sarah Wren of the WPA Federal Writers Project, in which she interviewed an old Lake County cattleman named Gus Schroeder. Gus, you may recognize his name if you just happen to be very familiar with Central Oregon history. This is the gentleman who lost his wife, Lucinda Schroeder, and their two-year-old son in the Silver Lake Christmas fire. Lucinda Schroeder was the great hero of that fire. She went into the burning building to guide other people out of the burning building and then didn't make it out herself. Some historians actually estimate that she saved at least a dozen people from burning to death and died herself. So there's that bit of background. In 1939, when this interview was done, though, Gus Schroeder was at the end of his career, as opposed to the beginning, as he was in 1894. He had been a prosperous cattleman in Central Oregon, but the Great Depression hit him pretty hard, and at the time that Sarah Wren was interviewing him, he was living in Portland. So I'll start off with the editor's note that runs with this. In the afternoon of March 23, 1939, Sarah B. Wren, a writer working for the Works Progress Administration, sat down with an old Eastern Oregon cowboy named Gus Schroeder on a bench in the park blocks of Portland. There, surrounded by other Portland neighbors who were out soaking up the rare early spring sun in the park, she interviewed him for the oral history project she was working on. What follows is the story she wrote. Mr. Schroeder was living at 1315 Southwest 10th Avenue in Portland. He'd been a wealthy and successful Lake County cattleman, but the Depression had busted him flat, and now he was living in Portland and just trying to get by. But, Wren wrote, his heart is on the ranges and the big outdoors. Wren described him as a fine-looking man, large, smooth-faced, with brown eyes and meticulous in his dress, a character of the Virginian cowboy type, gentle and slow-speaking and still handsome. He was a member of the Odd Fellows Lodge, originally from Red Bluff, California, but more recently living in the Silver Lake area. In 1894, his wife Lucinda Schroeder and their two-year-old son died in the Great Christmas Eve fire there. And this is Sarah B. Wren's transcription, essentially, of his story, as spoken to her. It is, for the most part, in his own words. She's probably strung some of them together. And she has phonetically spelled it to evoke his accent. So I'm going to try to read it in the spirit of that. My apologies if it ends up sounding a little too dorky. But here we go. Lake County was a wonderful stock country when I went there in 78. There was lots of game, too. Just about everything there was, and houses was few and far between. What there was log houses. They was pretty rough, with plenty of corrals about. The logs was hauled in from Mount Hagar, 7 or 8 miles away. Once a week we got the mail brought out to Silver Lake by a team and buckboard. Paisley was the nearest town. It was 60 miles to Paisley, and it had only about 200 people, but it had saloons. When the boys wanted them a time, they went to Paisley. They was great on playing jokes on each other, especially when they got a few drinks under their belts. Once there was a bunch of us at Paisley. We was watching a big card game in the saloon. There was quite a lot of chips passing hands, and everybody was watching. So Joe Bush, he slips out and gets a candle, and he rolls it in brown paper, and then he lights it, and then he come in there and threw it in among the bunch. It looked just exactly like a lit stick of dynamite. And criminy, how them fellers skedaddled! They was going in every direction for Sunday, and chips was flying every which way. The boys was all so mad when they see what it was, they chased Joe out and he lit out for home. He didn't show up there for some spell. Another time a joke was played was once when Sam Hadley got drunk and we laid him out on a billiard table and covered him with a cloth. It must have been an old tablecloth or something, 'cause it was white. And then Minor Wallace, he was a preacher's son, and he knew just what to say. He preached a funeral sermon over Sam. Gosh almighty, but that miner Wallace could talk. He sure would have made a good preacher. While he was preaching Sam's funeral oration, Sam come to out of his sleep, and of all the cussing you ever hear, Sam was good at that. He was good looking, too. Once when he was drunk, I got a cork and stuck it full of matches. I fastened the cork to a little stick, split at one end, and I put the split on Sam's nose and lit the matches and hollered, "Fire!" It didn't burn him any, too far away from his face for that, but it did black him up a plenty. Sam was mad at me for a long time for doing that. Course, we had lots of bucking contests. They was the real thing, too. Nothing made up about 'em like these rodeos today. And the saddles didn't have any places to put your knees under to help you hang on. Them saddles them days was a seat with mighty little curve and pommel for your lass rope. That was all. Not a lot of contraptions like now. Burl Conger was about the best on a horse I ever saw. I never see him get thrown, and he'd ride him just for fun. The boys would go out and run in a wild horse, and then they'd work it into the chute, throw a saddle on, and cinch it. Then Burl would jump in the saddle. The boys would open the chute, and away they'd go out in the open, and there'd be some fun. Maybe that cayuse would try every damn fool buck there was, twister, stiff-legged, whirling, rearing, everything. But he wouldn't get that boy Conger off. And mind ya, he wouldn't have a bridle. Shucks, what's the use? The old cayuse wouldn't even know what it meant. By and by, when he was all give out, the horse, I mean, the boys would chase him back in the corral and the chute, and Burl would climb off, chipper as you please. There was one boy, a half-breed named Walt Sibley, riding for John Jackson to Goose Lake Valley. He rode a Mustang till he got to bleeding at the lungs. The boys had to lash the pony and take him off. He just about died. I've seen some pretty fine roping in my day. One feller I knew was about the best I ever seen. He could lass underhand and overhand. I've seen him throw a calf 30 feet away catching both hind feet. He used a big loop. He'd throw the lass agin the shoulder so it'd loop under the belly, and then he'd jerk it up quick so he'd catch both feet. I seen him do it 8 times out of 10, over and over again. I wasn't no mean roper myself. Once a fella named Duncan and me was riding up the mountain range, we seen some mountain sheep and took off after 'em. Finally, I lassed one. Mountain sheep stupid and stubborn, just like other sheep. This un was scared and wouldn't budge no way. I tied my riata to the saddle horn and pulled, but I couldn't do anything with it. So Duncan and I tied his legs and tried to pack him on our horses, and that didn't work neither, so we got tired of it and turned it loose. About the most exciting thing I remember was a cattle stampede back in the early 90s. There was 12 or 14 riders of us, and we was taking 2,000 steers out to the Sikon country. They'd been bought and taken in small bunches out to Cold Springs, and that was where we picked them up. On from there, it was a 120-mile drive. Of course, we had to ride herd at night, doing it in two shifts. I was the boss of the first shift. It was midnight. We'd been singing, and I was just starting to go after the boys for the second shift when one of my boys, Johnny Parker it was, started braying like a jack. Man, it wasn't more than the shake of a sheep's tail when them cattle began milling, and then they was off. You never heard such a racket in your life, what with them running on that hard open ground, their bellowing and the horns crashing. The horns crashing was the worst. You wouldn't think they could make so much noise. They was just crazy with fear. Well, there wasn't much sleep for any of us that night. We'd try to get round 'em, yelling like mad, and every once in a while the tail end of the big bunch would drop off and wander away and then have to be herded in. It was long after sun up before we got 'em in control, and then we found we was 26 head out. 4 was killed, and the rest we finally tracked up the mountains and got back. We was 12 days going that 120 miles. We had a lot of songs we sung, but the only ones I remember was The Spanish Cavalier, Juanita, Leather Breeches, and Through the Keyhole in the Door. That last one was kind of smutty. Not bad, just kind of smutty. I don't remember how they went, any of them, just their names. Them boys them days didn't dress so gaudy as these rodeo riders today. They wore chaps, of course. Sometimes they was goatskin with the hair outside. Sometimes cow leather, maybe just plain or maybe with fancy carving on 'em. They wore flannel shirts most of the time, but plain colors, not these big check things you see today. They wore Stetson hats with stiff brims, and of course they wore neckerchiefs. there was sense to that, to keep their necks from burning. There was a time 4 or 5 years in the 80s when the boys wore tailor-made pants, made pretty tight with a strip of buckskin up the inside seam and the buckskin sewed over the seat. This buckskin was sewed on with fancy colored thread and fancy stitching, so they was pretty gay. It was quite a style with the boys out there, and I never knew of them pants being wore anyplace else. I don't know who started it. We didn't have much racing. Guess the boys was too tired riding range. But I did see one race I'll never forget. It was at Paisley. There was a fellow there named Dick Sherlock. Nobody liked him very much. And there was Uncle George Duncan. Sherlock had what they called a sheep camp team, and Uncle George had a span of bays. Some way they got a arguing about which could go faster, and they settled it on the track. There was a mile track, and those two men got out, one in his buckboard, that was Sherlock, and Uncle George in his buggy, and away they went, lickety-split. They run them horses clear around that mile track. Every minute it looked like one or t'other'd go over. Everybody in town, about 200-300 people, was out yelling their fool heads off. Even the women was out yelling, "Come on, Uncle George! Come on, Uncle George!" Uncle George beat by about 60 feet. I never got lost but once, and that wasn't in any blizzard. It was just a common old snowstorm. Duncan and me was up in the Tamarack Mountains. We was kinda cold, so we built a fire and warmed up, and then we got started home. Snow was falling, but it wasn't bad. We kept going and going and getting no place, and pretty soon we come to some tracks, and Duncan says, "There goes a couple of bulls, let's follow 'em." We followed 'em, and pretty soon there we was, right where we'd built the fire to warm ourselves. There we thought we was all right, we was just going in a circle the whole time. But there wasn't anything scary about it. We soon found our way out. We didn't have much dancing. The nearest girls was at Paisley. That was too far to go very often. But about the only chivalry in my collection was me own. That was in 1888. I was on my ranch at Silver Lake. Some of the boys tipped me off, and so when the crowd come, I was ready for 'em. I had a double-barreled shotgun, and I filled her up with powder. When I heard him, I opened the door a mite, stuck that gun out, and Jack Kelsey yelled, "Jesus Christ, boys, he's shooting at us!" I had to laugh then. I called him in and had a couple of jugs of whiskey I give him, and they got teed up and went home. That's the end of the interview. If you'd like to take a look at the original interview documents, they're on the WPA's website, which you can find most easily by going to my webpage about this story. And that is it for today. Coming up tomorrow, which is Friday, we're going to talk about a few of the deadly weather events that come to Oregon. Oregon doesn't have a reputation for deadly weather events. Most people think we're pretty boring here. Every now and then there's a rainstorm, and every now and then there's a windstorm, takes the roof off the chicken coop, and everybody gets back to work. But there have been some humdingers in the state. We'll kind of go through them. And this is an article that was written just before the 50-year anniversary of the Columbus Day storm, so people were thinking about heavy weather. Looking back for stuff, I found a couple of tornadoes even. Well, look for that after about 6 a.m. tomorrow morning. In the meantime, go out and fill up the rest of the day with good stuff. Bye now.